Part 5. Patents. The patent privilege has been used on a massive scale to promote concentration of capital, erect entry barriers, and maintain a monopoly of advanced technology in the hands of Western corporations. It is hard even to imagine how much more decentralized the economy would be without it. Right libertarian Murray Rothbard considered patents a fundamental violation of free market principles. The man who has not bought a machine, and who arrives at the same invention independently, will, on the free market, be perfectly able to use and sell his invention. Patents prevent a man from using his invention even though all the property is his, and he has not stolen the invention, either explicitly or implicitly, from the first inventor. Patents, therefore, are grants of exclusive monopoly privilege by the state, and are invasions of property rights on the market. Patents make an astronomical price difference. Until the early 1970s, for example, Italy did not recognize drug patents. As a result, Roche products charged the British National Health a price of over 40 times greater for patented components of Librium and Valium than charged by competitors in Italy. Patents suppress innovation as much as they encourage it. Chakravarthi Raghavan pointed out that research scientists who actually do the work of inventing are required to sign over patent rights as a condition of employment, while patents and industrial security programs prevent sharing of information and suppress competition in further improvement of patented inventions. Rothbard likewise argued that patents eliminate the competitive spur for further research, because incremental innovation based on others' patents is prohibited, and because the holder can rest on his laurels for the entire period of the patent, with no fear of a competitor improving his invention. And they hamper technical progress because mechanical inventions are discoveries of natural law rather than individual creations, and hence similar independent inventions occur all the time. The simultaneity of inventions is a familiar historical fact. The intellectual property regime under the Uruguay round of GATT, the Global Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, goes far beyond traditional patent law in suppressing innovation. One benefit of traditional patent law, at least, was that it required an invention under patent to be published. Under U.S. pressure, however, trade secrets were included in GATT. As a result, governments will be required to help suppress information not formally protected by patents. And patents are not necessary as an incentive to innovate. According to Rothbard, invention is rewarded by the competitive advantage accruing to the first developer of an idea. This is borne out by F.M. Shearer's testimony before the FTC in 1995. Shearer spoke of a survey of 91 companies in which only 7 accorded high significance to patent protection as a factor in their R&D investments. Most of them described patents as the least important of considerations. Most companies considered their chief motivation in R&D decisions to be the necessity of remaining competitive, the desire for efficient production, and the desire to expand and diversify their sales. In another study, Shearer found no negative effect on R&D spending as a result of compulsory licensing of patents. A survey of U.S. firms found that 86% of inventions would have been developed without patents. In the case of automobiles, office equipment, rubber products, and textiles, the figure was 100%. The one exception was drugs, in which 60% supposedly would not have been invented. I suspect disingenuousness on the part of the respondents, however. For one thing, drug companies get an unusually high portion of their R&D funding from the government, and many of their most lucrative products were developed entirely at government expense. And Shearer himself cited evidence to the contrary. The reputation advantage for being the first into a market is considerable. For example, in the late 1970s, the structure of the industry and pricing behavior was found to be very similar between drugs with and those without patents. Being the first mover with a non-patented drug allowed a company to maintain a 30% market share and to charge premium prices. The injustice of patent monopolies is exacerbated by government funding of research and innovation, with private industry reaping monopoly profits from technology it did not spend a penny to develop. 1999, extending the Research and Experimentation Tax Credit was, along with extensions of a number of other corporate tax preferences, considered the most urgent business of the congressional leadership. Hastert, when asked if any elements of the tax bill were essential, said, "I think the tax preference extenders are something we're going to have to work on." Ways and Means Chair Bill Archer added, "Before the year is out, we will do the extenders in a very stripped-down bill that doesn't include anything else." A 5-year extension of the Research and Experimentation Credit retroactive to 1 July 1999 was expected to cost $13.1 billion. That credit makes the effective tax rate on R&D spending less than zero. The Government Patent Policy Act of 1980, with its 1984 and 1986 amendments, allowed private industry to keep patents on products developed with government R&D money, and then to charge 10, 20, or 40 times the cost of production. For example, AZT was developed with government money and in the public domain since 1964. The patent was given away to Burroughs Wellcome Corp. As if the deck were not sufficiently stacked already, the pharmaceutical companies in 1999 actually lobbied Congress to extend certain patents by 2 years by a special act of private law. Patents have been used throughout the 20th century to circumvent antitrust laws, according to David Noble. They were bought up in large numbers to suppress competition, which also resulted in the suppression of invention itself. Edwin Prindle, a corporate patent lawyer, wrote in 1906, "Patents are the best and most effective means of controlling competition. They occasionally give absolute command of the market, enabling their owner to name the price without regard to the cost of production. Patents are the only legal form of absolute monopoly." Patents played a key role in the formation of the electrical appliance, communications, and chemical industries. General Electric and Westinghouse expanded to dominate the electrical manufacturing market at the turn of the century largely through patent control. In 1906, they curtailed the patent litigation between them by pooling their patents. AT&T also expanded primarily through strategies of patent monopoly. The American chemical industry was marginal until 1917, when Attorney General Mitchell Palmer seized German patents and distributed them among the major American chemical companies. DuPont got licenses on 300 of the 735 patents. Patents are also being used on a global scale to lock the transnational corporations into a permanent monopoly of productive technology. The single most totalitarian provision of the Uruguay Round is probably its intellectual property provisions. GATT has extended both the scope and duration of patents far beyond anything ever envisioned in original patent law. In England, patents were originally for 14 years, the time needed to train 2 journeymen in succession, and, by analogy, the time necessary to go into production and reap the initial profit for originality. By that standard, given the shorter training times required today and the shorter lifespan of technology, the period of monopoly should be shorter. Instead, the U.S. seeks to extend them to 50 years. According to Martin Korkok Peng, the U.S. is by far the most absolutist of the participants in the Uruguay Round. Unlike the European community, it would require patent protection for plant and animal varieties and for biological processes for plant and animal protection. The provisions for biotech are really a way of increasing trade barriers and forcing consumers to subsidize the TNCs engaged in agribusiness. The U.S. seeks to apply patents to genetically modified organisms, effectively pirating the work of generations of third world breeders by isolating beneficial genes in traditional varieties and incorporating them in new GMOs, and maybe even enforcing patent rights against the traditional variety which was the source of the genetic material. For example, Monsanto has attempted to use the presence of their DNA in a crop as prima facie evidence of pirating, when it is much more likely that their variety cross-pollinated and contaminated the farmer's crop against his will. The Pinkerton Agency, by the way, plays a leading role in investigating such charges. That's right, the same folks who have been breaking strikes and kicking organizers downstairs for the past century. Even jackbooted thugs have to diversify to make it in the global economy. The developed world has pushed particularly hard to protect industries relying on or producing generic technologies, and to restrict diffusion of dual-use technologies. The U.S.-Japanese trade agreement on semiconductors, for example, is a cartel-like managed trade agreement. So much for, quote-unquote, free trade. Patent law traditionally required a holder to work the invention in a country in order to receive patent protection. UK law allowed compulsory licensing after 3 years if an invention was not being worked, or being worked fully, and demand was met to a substantial extent by importation, or where the export market was not being supplied because of the patentee's refusal to grant licenses on reasonable terms. The central motivation in the GATT intellectual property regime, however, is to permanently lock in the collective monopoly of advanced technology by TNCs and prevent independent competition from ever arising in the third world. It would, as Martin Korkokpeng writes, effectively prevent the diffusion of technology to the third world and would tremendously increase monopoly royalties of the TNCs whilst curbing the potential development of third world technology. Only 1% of patents worldwide are owned in the third world. Of patents granted in the 1970s by third world countries, 84% were foreign owned. But fewer than 5% of foreign patents were actually used in production. As we saw before, the purpose of owning a patent is not necessarily to use it, but to prevent anyone else from using it. Raghavan summed up nicely the effect on the third world. Given the vast outlays in R&D and investments, as well as the short life cycle of some of these products, the leading industrial nations are trying to prevent emergence of competition by controlling the flows of technology to others. The Uruguay round is being sought to be used to create export monopolies for the products of industrial nations, and block or slow down the rise of competitive rivals, particularly in the newly industrializing third world countries. At the same time, the technologies of senescent industries of the North are sought to be exported to the South under conditions of assured rentier income. Corporate propagandists piously denounce anti-globalists as enemies of the third world, seeking to use trade barriers to maintain an affluent Western lifestyle at the expense of the poor nations. The above measures, trade barriers, to permanently suppress third world technology and keep the South as a big sweatshop, give the lie to this, quote, humanitarian concern. This is not a case of differing opinions, or of sincerely mistaken understanding of the facts. Setting aside false subtleties, what we see here is pure evil at work, Orwell's boot stamping on a human face forever. If any architects of this policy believe it to be for general human well-being, it only shows the capacity of ideology to justify the impressor to himself and enable him to sleep at night.